This is a Squiz podcast. We're your shortcut to being informed.
Hi, it's Claire Kimball here, founder of The Squiz. One of the things that you've told us time and time again is that you appreciate how we do the news, but also appreciate the fun and the quirky bits and pieces too. So I wanted to let you know that we have a weekly newsletter called The Saturday Squiz. It's the week in news, but it also has recommendations of great recipes, books, TV shows, podcasts, and so much more. So grab your phone, go on, and head to thesquiz.com.au to sign up. We're the shortcut to the news and so much more. That link is also in your episode notes.
Good morning, I'm Alice Dempster.
And I'm Claire Kimball.
It's Wednesday the 27th of March. In your Squiz today, Assange gets a lifeline, US-Israel relations are on the rocks, a legislative rush in Canberra, and a sticky situation. This is your Squiz today. Claire, Julian Assange is getting closer to learning if he will be extradited from the UK to the US to face hacking and espionage charges that could see him locked up for the rest of his life. Last night, the UK's High Court gave the US government 3 weeks to provide some key assurances.
Yeah, heading into last night, there was an expectation that there would be a decision about whether he could appeal the UK's order for him to be extradited. But what we have come up with is another stretching out of his legal options. What the judges have asked the US to provide are assurances about Assange's First Amendment rights. The First Amendment is the one that protects freedom of speech and freedom of the press. And also they want to know that he won't face the death penalty if he is extradited to the US. Those are points that the court says that Assange has a real prospect of success if he is to get his appeal to the UK government's decision to extradite him over the line. But something else to note is that the judges disagreed with Assange's argument that the US is persecuting him for his political opinions.
There is obviously a lot of background to this. So it's related to Assange publishing sensitive US government documents more than a decade ago in his role as the founder of WikiLeaks. And it wasn't just one or two, Claire. There were thousands.
Yeah, there was a lot of information that Assange and WikiLeaks did put into the public domain. We're talking about things like a video that showed the killing of 18 civilians in Iraq. That included two staffers from the media outlet Reuters. Also classified US military documents on the Afghan and Iraq wars. And then more than 250,000 secret US State Department diplomatic cables. Those are things that talked about the inner workings of their very important negotiations and assessments of world leaders. Now, what Assange's team say is that all of that shows that he was just a journalist doing what journalists do, which is to share very uncomfortable facts with the public. But America says that he's a spy who endangered the lives of thousands of people.
As for what happens next, if the US government doesn't provide the assurances that the courts asked for, Assange can appeal his extradition. But if the US does respond, a hearing will go ahead in May to decide if their assurances are satisfactory before a final decision is then made. Assange's wife, Stella, spoke outside the court. She called the decision astounding and she's urged the US government not to issue the assurances. She says they should drop this shameful case that should never have been brought. There's been a major incident in the US port city of Baltimore, Claire. Rescue crews are searching a local river for at least 6 missing people after a cargo ship crashed into a major bridge there, sending it collapsing into the water.
Yeah, if you're getting up this morning and seeing any news, chances are you're going to see pictures of this ship crashing into that bridge. It is a really spectacular scene. This bridge is called the Francis Scott Key Bridge. It's about 2.5 kilometres long, and this incident happened at about 1:30 a.m. local time. Reports this morning say that that big cargo ship might have had a power outage and that saw it unable to actually pull up or steer or do anything to avoid that accident. Also, they say that they were able to make a mayday call, which meant that authorities were able to stop vehicles from getting onto the bridge. If they hadn't done that, then the casualty list could be a lot longer than it looks like it is.
Yeah, and the Danish company which was chartering the ship at the time, Maersk, has released a statement. It says it's horrified by what has happened and its thoughts are with the people affected. Claire, there's been a lot of fallout after the UN Security Council's resolution demanding a ceasefire in Gaza. The big takeaway from that was that Israel's longtime ally, the US, abstained from voting, which essentially saw it waved through. And that has really shone a spotlight on the cracks that are showing in that US-Israel relationship.
Yeah, and I guess the thing to point out there is America abstaining from voting on that ceasefire resolution is a really big shift from its position on previous vetoes. It's either blocked ceasefire resolutions from other countries that have put it up, or it has put up its own ceasefire resolutions that have been voted down. So abstaining from that vote really is a big shift, and reports say that it really does point to US and Israel relations being at a low. Experts are saying that the trust between US President Joe Biden and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is fraying, and that is a big issue because there's still a lot of negotiating to do.
And the deterioration of their relationship could have some serious consequences. Biden's been trying to persuade Netanyahu to call off his troops' planned invasion of the southern Gazan city of Rafah. Biden believes that that would amount to a humanitarian catastrophe for the more than 1.5 million Palestinians sheltering there. But if the relationship breaks down, negotiations on that could be even more difficult. This week, our podcast is brought to you by Aware Super. Regardless of whether retirement is 2 or 20 years away, Aware Super can help you get a plan in place to live your best retirement. Visit aware.com.au to find out more. How about some Aussie news, Claire? Parliament is about to rise for a break until the May budget, and things can get a bit fast and furious as the days count down. That was absolutely the case yesterday as Immigration Minister Andrew Giles introduced another slab of new rules to deal with people in immigration detention.
So this latest chapter in this story is that there's a new case heading to the High Court next month involving an asylum seeker who refuses to be deported. And if they're successful, reports say that it could see about 100 people in the same boat released from immigration detention. So yesterday, new legislation was introduced to ensure that the government can deport people who refuse to return to their birth country because of fear of persecution. It would also see people from nations that don't accept unwilling deportees denied visas to Australia, and that would include tourists as well.
It's the third tranche of legislation since November's High Court ruling that saw 152 people, mostly convicted criminals, released from immigration detention. Critics say it could see Australia send desperate people to their deaths. And yesterday, the coalition made a lot of noise about the government dropping the ball on this whole issue, but it will support the legislation that the Albanese government says must be passed today. Claire, there's been a lot of heavy news today, so I reckon we need a bit of sweetness. And if there's one thing that Canada is well known for, it's maple syrup. Apparently the country is facing a shortage of syrup, though, with the world's only syrup reserve reaching a 16-year low.
I know this is a controversial view. I'm not much into maple syrup on my pancakes, but look,
controversial.
This isn't a podcast about me and my pancake preferences. That reserve in Canada holds up to 60 million. Million kilograms of syrup, but levels have fallen last year to about 3 million kilos. It still sounds like a lot, but the experts say that shortfall is real. They've blamed rising demand as well as the warmer weather in Canada that has led to poor harvests. And Alice, a fun fact for today, Canada produces about 75% of the world's entire maple syrup production. And thank goodness for those who do like maple syrup on their pancakes. they can see a way through the shortage.
Well, if things do go south, though, some academics in the US state of New Jersey are taking matters into their own hands. They're attempting to cultivate a different type of maple tree. Their aim is to establish a new local syrup industry. I'm not sure New Jersey syrup has quite the same ring to it as Canadian maple syrup, though, Claire.
No, go for the real deal.
Squeeze the day, Claire. I wanted to flag something from the latest episode of News Club today. You and Kate looked at the cost of big sporting events in Oz, which is a hot topic at the moment.
Last week, there were three of those sorts of things bumping around the news. Of course, there was a conversation about the cost of this AFL stadium that's going to be built in Hobart. Also, some numbers that were put around the cost of abandoning the Commonwealth Games in Victoria. And, of course, a big conversation about how Brisbane's going to deliver the Olympic Games in 2032. So it's a conversation that is bubbling around. That big cost on taxpayers to actually provide the infrastructure is something that we've pulled together for News Club with some really great in-depth reads to get across it.
If you're keen to have a listen, look for News Club in your podcast app and hit follow. And that's it from us today. Thank you for listening. We'll be back with you again tomorrow.
Hi there, it's Bryce Corbett here from Squiz Kids. It's been a big couple of weeks for news, and one thing that's emerged is the increasingly concerning role that mis- and disinformation are playing in the wake of big news events. It's why there's never been a more important time for our kids to be taught to be critical consumers of media. It's also why we created NewsHounds, a fun 8-part podcast series with accompanying classroom workbook to teach primary school kids how to spot misinformation when they come across it online. It's already being used in over 2,000 classrooms around the country. To make sure the kids in your life are among them, get their teacher to head to squizkids.com.au and sign up for a free account. You're very welcome.